Hi, I'm Sally Hughes, and this is the return of Beyond the Bathroom, where each week I find out how my guests feel about their own appearance. What kind of relationship do they have with their own face and body? What are their go-to beauty routines? Are they obsessive about their appearance, or is it low on their list of priorities? And how have time and experience changed the way they feel about the way they look? Taking a long, hard look in the mirror today is Candice Brathwaite. Candice is a best-selling author, journalist and presenter, often seen dispensing style advice on ITV's Lorraine. Her 2020 book, I Am Not Your Baby Mother, documenting the experience of Black British motherhood, has variously been described as remarkable, searing and brilliant. She followed this with Sister Sister, an anthology of essays about all kinds of things she wishes someone had talked to her about when she was younger. Her young adult novel, Cuts Both Ways, was published in 2022. A self-confessed fashion and beauty addict, Candice is a beacon of positivity online who advocates self-acceptance, self-forgiveness and self-celebration. That said, she doesn't shy away from difficult topics, some of which I hope we'll get to visit today.
But before that, a massive thank you to our wonderful series sponsor, Skin & Me. Skin & Me is your most accessible, fast track to simplified skincare, offering powerful active ingredients in formulations you can't buy on the high street. Skin & Me can create a treatment for your specific skin concerns, tailored to you by experts. Whether you want to target adult acne, pigmentation, melasma, rosacea, or skin aging, this is powerful, personalized skincare that truly works. As someone who has used Skin & Me for years, I can honestly say I wouldn't go without it. Later in this series, I'm delighted to say we'll be joined by one of Skin & Me's very own dermatologists to answer any and all of your pressing skincare questions. You can submit your question by emailing btb@insanityhq.com. Now on to today's episode of Beyond the Bathroom.
Welcome, Candice Brathwaite. Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. You look unbelievably glam. I think Candice might be our most glamorous podcast guest so far. The genius, the brilliant thing about podcasts and radio, and the reason I've always worked in audio rather than visual, is you can turn up looking like a right old dog. That's what I love. The number of times I've gone to BBC in Brighton in my pyjamas, like looking absolutely hanging, and that is what I love about it. But oh no, you've turned up for a podcast looking unbelievably good with a red lip, a black maxi dress, some Loewe heels with the nail polish here. I mean, she is not here to play. I wish you could see her. I wanted to ask you, first of all, what I always want to know really from everybody, because I think it's so interesting. Can you remember the first time, for better or worse, you became aware of how you looked?
Yeah, and it is totally not for good. I remember being on a bus coming down from Crystal Palace to Brixton, and this black guy, who hopefully wasn't in his right mind, but I'm not too sure. My mum and I were separated because the bus was really packed, so she's at a seat at the back, I'm near the front, and this guy's just like, "You're really ugly." I'm like six.
Wow.
I'm six. I don't really know what ugliness or beauty is, and I think what makes the story worse, it was a black guy. So I've just got this like 6 foot dreadlock black guy leering over me, who's just like, "You're really ugly, you know. No one's ever going to want to be with you." I'm six.
I'm struggling to even compute that scenario because it's poisonous, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's poisonous to do that to a child.
A child. And also, I just remember now I'm an adult, no adult. Even though I'm next to strangers.
It's aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No adult stepping in. No adult defending me, which then almost became like a theme in my life for a really long time. And I know it's definitely a theme of many a black woman's life. They feel like they're never defended. And in that moment, that's when I started to think about what I looked like. Prior to that, though, I thought I was in this glorious majority because late 80s, early 90s, Brixton, white people were the minority. Mm-hmm. In my school of maybe 500, there's two white kids. Mm-hmm. So I thought oh, we run mm-hmm. this manor, you know, I'd lived in this little bubble, and he just literally put a hole in that. And I was just like, am I? And then, you know, I started looking at my nan and my mum and like really trying to assess their beauty. My maternal grandmother is very, very dark skinned. My mother is really quite light skinned. So I was like, is that the difference? I had so many questions.
That's the most shocking answer to that question I've ever had. There's something so repulsive about bringing that to the table of a six-year-old girl, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's aggressive, it's threatening, it's frightening, it's polluting.
Yeah.
It's so many different things. And so the people on the bus presumably must have overheard.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. He was being so loud enough that people near me could hear, but I definitely know my mum didn't hear. My mum is very much about that life. He would have been through the bus window.
Sure.
But there were enough people that muffled that from like reaching my mum. And I never told my mum.
Why didn't you tell your mum?
I didn't tell my mum. I don't think I spoke about it until I was in my teens.
To anyone?
To anyone. And I don't know why I didn't reiterate the story. Maybe there was a part of me that was like, well, that makes it true if I then tell people that.
I wonder as well, and look, I can't ever put myself in your position. That's such a horrible, traumatic thing to happen. But I wonder if as well you didn't want to invite debate over whether it was true or false.
Good point. Very good point. For then, you know, there to be those silences or for me to think something is hanging in the balance.
And having to interpret people's response to that, I suppose.
Yeah. At six, I never said a thing. And when family members did find out, when I finally opened up about it in my early teens, everyone was mortified.
Of course.
Everyone was like, why didn't you say? I was like, guys, I was six. Now I'm a mother. I'm like, why was this guy so consumed with what men would like? It's just so...
Well, it's slightly creepy.
Yeah.
It's quite creepy that he thought you needed to hear his opinion of your appearance. Why are you thinking about what a six-year-old even looks like? For better or worse, why are you even thinking about that? That's such a shaping experience, I would imagine. I would think that was such a shaping experience. You mentioned your mum and your grandmother, your maternal grandmother being dark-skinned, your mother being light-skinned. Tell me what they were like as women. What did you see in terms of their appearance? Were they women who were very well groomed? Were they proud in the way they presented themselves to the world?
Oh yeah, sometimes too proud, both of them, to the point of maybe psychoticness.
Tell me about that. So
my mum was a makeup counter girl.
Oh wow.
Which just opened up a completely different world in my home, because I'm like this kid surrounded by like fashion fair and like just being able to play with makeup. She allowed me to play with makeup, and she allowed me to wear makeup quite early on. As much to everyone's disbelief, I had horrendous teen acne, really bad scarring, really huge pussy spots. And she knew that allowing me to play with makeup was like boosting my confidence.
Right.
So she allowed me to do that. My maternal grandmother, on the other hand, was all about the clothes, less about the makeup. Jesus, she didn't need the makeup. Her skin, again, being so rich in melanin, it was almost like it was faultless. It's like someone just literally dipped her in chocolate. So she never wore foundation. It was literally mascara and this deep purple tone lipstick by a very cheap brand called Island Beauty, who drove me up the wall because she just got it everywhere. But my nan was all about the clothes, to the point that she had like 7 wardrobes in a 3-bedroom home. She had fitted wardrobes in my mum's room, fitted in hers, and then she shoved some in the tiny guest room. Clothes everywhere, just seeping out from every hole. The thing is, the story my maternal granddad always tells me is that clothes were all they had when they came to this country, in terms of armor, in terms of respectability.
And where did they come from?
Barbados.
Okay.
So it was like, we're gonna get called the N-word. We, you know, someone's gonna throw us out of a pub, but being well dressed is gonna like move the needle, because people, whilst they can see our race, they're gonna struggle to determine our class. Mm-hmm. By what we have on. Mm-hmm. So, I heard stories about my granddad. Like, there was a time, I don't know if people could believe, you could go to really posh, like, lingerie shops and pay weekly for the item, like a proper layaway system.
Yeah.
So he'd do that for my nan, like, proper posh shit. I think I grew up pretty hard. Well, I did grow up like penniless at some point. But when I was living with my maternal grandparents, like, they had a couple of Rolexes each. They liked good stuff, or they liked the idea of what being draped in these things could do for them. Now I start to pick it apart. It was all about protection and projection. Like, how can we appear to seem well-to-do? And so, yeah, it's just all very interesting. Now I get to think about it.
It wasn't so much about, it sounds as though it wasn't so much about social mobility as being socially bulletproof in a way, kind of presenting.
Yes.
In a way that was flawless.
Exactly. Like my granddad, I was raised by my maternal granddad. He got mugged maybe a couple of months before I was born, and the mugging left him blind in one eye.
Oh, good.
So he was written off work and he became a stay-at-home husband, and my nan went out to work. So when my mum went back to work, he was there every day, and he would iron my hair ribbons. The ribbons that went in my hair,
just immaculate,
were steamed every morning. I also went to a school where you didn't have to wear school uniform, and he put me in uniform. Do you know how degrading that was? I was always just so cheesed off. Like, someone's coming in these sick Mickey Mouse dungarees and here I am in this pinafore that's so stiff I can barely sit. Like, I was just like, this is madness. But my granddad was like, I'm from an island where even in the searing heat, a kid's uniform is really important. And I don't care that you're in this school where they don't want you. To the point that I think, because a little later down the line, my nan and granddad fought for me to get into this really prestigious Christian school. And I was like, a big part of that fight was the uniform. Like, you had a day hat, you had a sun hat, you had a rain hat. Like, I was like, a big push of that school was how these children were presented. And so, yeah, all these little things I've just taken with me for better or worse into my adult life.
It sounds like a sort of quite a profound sense of self-respect and dignity that he had.
Yes.
That kind of went through.
Yeah. And now, only now, at, I think, what is he, 87? Only now will he not wear a three-piece suit. So for a really long time, he'd just turn up to, like, sports day in a three-piece suit and a pocket watch. I was like, Granddad, this is really stuffy. Like, dude, you can't take part even if you wanted to. Like, so now he's in, like, a chinos, relaxed shirt phase of his life, finally. But, and also he smokes a pipe, which is the most romantic thing in
he
the world.
He sounds very elegant. You're like really selling him. Like, he sounds so elegant.
And like, my one life duty now is to find the tobacco, because you can't just pick that up any old where. So I'm on some dodgy website at 1 a.m. when he says he's out of his baccy. I'm like, yes, granddad. Always has like a little pocket knife for the tip of the pipe. Almost like, it's just like watching a man from a different world.
But is it a different world? Because it's now 2023 and you're immaculate and you're his granddaughter. So you have taken it. You must acknowledge that you have taken that you have inherited that in some way.
I absolutely do. To the point, I remember one time when I was like piss poor and on job seeker's allowance, I took my nails off because I couldn't like afford the upkeep of acrylic nails. And I went to his house. His nickname for me is Booby. He was like, Booby, where are your nails? I was like, Granddad, like, I can't afford that right now. And he went to his pension pot and he gave me money to like have them put back on. And he was like, I don't care how hard up you are. That is a priority. And only for the pandemic have I seen my nail beds ever again. I've had acrylics for 17 years. He was like, it's so part and parcel of who you are that when I like put my hand out, he was just like, what's going on there? Like, that's not what I'm used to seeing. He can tell immediately if I've had a fresh haircut. He's like, yeah, I watched you on TV today. I think you're in need of a haircut.
All right, granddad, like, wind your neck in.
And one of his proudest moments, we recently bought a new house, which I didn't tell him about. We kept it a secret for 8 months. And then I had a car service bring him up without telling him the address. And he comes in. The room he gave the most praise was my walk-in wardrobe. He was like, yes, yes, you need this. It's granddad. So yes, I do absolutely understand how, especially, and interestingly, he's a man, but especially him, I've just taken those things with me. And also, I was like a childhood ballroom dancer that makes you think about your appearance all the time.
Right, tell me about that. I find that very interesting. We haven't had anybody on before who was in that kind of world as a child. Well, except for maybe Patsy Kensit, who was a child actress. Yeah. Similar thing where suddenly, kind of before you would organically do so, you're thinking about getting dressed up and putting makeup on and having your hair perfect and kind of turning out at a young age. Tell me what that environment was like and what was expected of you.
Really highly pressurised. And what was expected of me was to be exactly the opposite of who I naturally was.
Which is what?
So like, your hair had to be really straight and slick back in a bun. So Friday evenings before like a dance recital on Saturday morning, my hair's being taken to with something called a hot comb, which is an iron comb that you put on an open fire.
Brutal, a hot comb.
And like you hear the searing of 4C hair coming to, and like it would burn my ears and my nan would be like, oh, stop complaining. And then you can't even have a bath because the minute it smells humidity, your natural curl pattern wants to, So I'm like sleeping like I'm a dead person if I'm sleeping at all. I'm on 25 pillows. It's just, and then on
how old are you at this point?
I'm about seven. I'm about seven.
So essentially part of your job to be in that world is to have white hair.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. White hair and also a white body type. Which I can say now I've got black children, or even my son, our bodies are so different from a very young age. Muscle mass, proportion. And so all of a sudden, by 8, 9, I'm really already thinking about calories or what I should and shouldn't be eating, because I know I'm up against girls who have no thigh at all. Like, they're not even thinking about that. And they're really straight. And mate, I started my periods by 11. So curves have started to show themselves by about 9.
Sure.
And it really affected me because later on, I went to a performing arts school called Brit School. Even though I got accepted on the dance strand a year in, I switched to major in theatre. And a big part of that was, like, I was so fucked off with thinking about my body all the time. I remember once being in line for food and a dance teacher like shouting at a few of us girls who were picking up cheese baguettes, and she was like, you know that's gonna show later.
Let's pause to thank our wonderful series sponsor, Skin and Me. Your Skin and Me Daily Doser combines the expertise of dermatology clinicians with everyday convenience. With a simple twist and click, each evening the Daily Doser dispenses the perfect amount of your bespoke treatment cream. I do it myself like clockwork. Skin and Me is powerful, personalised skincare designed by experts to treat adult acne, melasma, pigmentation, rosacea, fine lines and wrinkles, skin texture and pores, and delivers healthy skin glow with formulations you won't find on the high street, delivered directly to your door. Every single consultation and photo set submitted by Skin and Me members is personally reviewed by an expert dermatology clinician. For only £24.99 per month, this is excellent value for a dermatological treatment plan created just for you with your skin in mind. Skin and Me is powerful, personalised skincare that truly works. You can try your first month of treatment for just £4.99. Just visit skinandme.com and use the code SallyandMe to get started.
We hear so much talk about the pressure that young models are under, but I have never seen anything like the pressure young dancers are under.
Gosh.
I mean, weighed at school, weighed at college on a weekly basis. Like, I've known people.
So bad. And there were, inclusive of me, because I was a pretty great dancer, but there were girls and even boys that you know were put in the second set purely because of body type, not because of talent.
Interesting.
And there were kids in first set who were pretty shit,
but looked the
part. They were a rake. And so they wanted those to be the kids that represented the school in that light. All of these things, I've only just started to unpack. And also, I'm only just realising that I'm going to think about, in some respect, food, my body and my appearance till the day I die. Like, I'm having to, like, accept that in some part of my brain.
Do you think you think about it more than most people?
Yes. I have friends who are smaller and bigger who are really shocked at how much I struggle with food noise. Or I'm like, yeah, send me the menu before we go. Like, I'm very what's going to be on the menu?
I'm so shocked to hear that, Candice. Let me tell you why I'm shocked to hear that. So you and I follow each other on social media. I went through a phase a couple of years ago. I'm not particularly somebody who thinks about body, but I did go through a phase a couple of years ago where I muted loads and loads of people on social media who, through no fault of their own, made me feel bad in some way. Through no fault of their own, just being themselves. And you always stayed because I look at you and I think you're somebody who feels very positively about themselves in a way that I appreciate and admire. And so to hear that you think about body and the legacy of all that stuff you're talking about leads you to think about this stuff a disproportionate amount of time. I'm really shocked to hear that. Yeah.
And you know what? I feel cool that you're shocked, and it feels nice to like say this in a safe space, because that's not to say like this bubbly person who does OOTDs are fake. It's just me recognizing that I'm having to deal with decades of plugging of a system that I've got nothing to do with.
For sure.
Do you know what I mean? I'm like, oh no, fat phobia. You done a fucking number on me.
Yeah.
That, like, I am of the slim fast weigh-in era.
Are you?
Like, that was all I saw. I also come from those typical West Indian households where every woman's got something to say about your body.
Okay.
From a really young age.
Okay.
And it's like, oh, you're getting too fat, you're not going to get have a husband, you lose the weight, oh, you're too thin, you look sick. There's always, to the point that a major part of the female breakdowns in family relationships for me is absolutely because people can't shut the fuck up. I'm like, wow. You know what? Nah, you're not going to hear from me for 10 years. Also, especially when I had a kid, everything just got louder. I was like, you're not bringing that shit into my house. Those questions, those thoughts. I'm having to deal with the ramifications of that. Esme is not. No, 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 no. No one has ever like squeezed Esme's arm and been like, oh, you're getting a bit chunky. Whereas that would constantly happen to me when aunties from America or Barbados would come in. Oh my gosh, you're even bigger than the last time. I should be. I'm 12.
I'm 2 years older than the last time.
I would hope so. And so I'm just like, I'm, like I said, for better or worse, it's always going to be something that bubbles. And my husband really tries to help with that. But I've had to be really firm in family boundaries so that my kids don't. I always think like we think generational trauma is this big thing. Sometimes it's the tiny things.
Right.
Like asking a kid why have they got so much on their plate.
We think of these transformative traumatic life events, not the drip drip of discourse in the household, right? In the run-up to this conversation, I've watched so many interviews with you in the name of research, and I heard you talk about your daughter and your who you've just mentioned, and her experiences of colorism, and you saying, well, I'm really familiar with that from my own childhood. And so I'd love you, as comfortable as you feel, to talk about that and what steps you have tried to take with your own daughter in preventing her from experiencing this disproportionate preocupation with how she looks.
So racism is one thing I think we're all attuned with. Colorism is just, it really is that ugly cousin at a family function. So colorism is literally based on a bias due to the tone of your skin. And I come from a place where the darker you are, the uglier you are. Like, it doesn't matter what you actually look like. You have a darker skin tone, so you're further removed from white beauty and the white gaze.
As was literally said to you as a six-year-old by a black man.
Literally. Okay. You know what I mean? Literally.
Could not be more present in your own childhood.
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas, funnily enough, though, I didn't grow up in a colorist household. Like I said, my nan was very dark. My mum was very light. My granddad is extremely light. All my siblings are lighter than me. My dad, rest his soul, had an obsession with very dark skinned women. So sometimes I look at how he got with my mum, I was like, well, that was a fluke. Like, it's also, so I was living in a house where it just didn't penetrate because there was no judgment or bias in my house. The minute I went to school, I was like, oh shit. And it happened during Kiss Chase. My best mate, Jadelle, very, very fair skinned, very silky long hair. She's black, but very light. Like, so many boys chasing her all the time. No one chasing me. And whilst we didn't have the language for it at primary school, I got it. I was like, oh yeah, she's the beauty standard where we are from. And that just was how you knew it to be in primary school, in secondary school. And so colorism for me, it's even shown up in my work life. And I think that's been the hardest pill to swallow.
How so?
Like knowing you're the best for a job or a role, having the fucking internet tell you you're the best and you not getting it because of how you look. So my daughter is slightly fairer than me. And so I'm always really looking out for signs that she could be the girl that hurts my feelings.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm always like...
Wow. That's so interesting.
I'm like, and how do you feel about the black girls at school that are darker than you? And she's never shown, not a thread. Sure. But I'm just like, I'm aware. And I've got friends who are the same skin tone as me who have lighter children. And we're all like on the edge of our seats. Like, is our kid going to be that kid that makes kid us feel inferior? We're all like, Also, whilst managing the fact that our kids still aren't white. And so colorism and racism can, of course, still happen to them. But also understanding that even as their mothers, there's a hierarchy. And, you know, where do they fit in that? It's so... Sometimes I just go to bed exhausted because there's so much to think about.
I mean, that's fraught, isn't it?
Yeah.
All of that's fraught. But alongside all that as well, just wanting them to be kids.
Just kids.
just kids. Go to school and be
so,
kids.
So like just having to pick up on like certain phone conversations. Or I remember one time Esme, her hair is consistently in braids right now. And there was a gap in between wash days and her getting a fresh set of braids. And she went to school with her afro out. They were playing, I think it was hockey against an opposing school. And some white boys made fun of her hair. And she held it together the whole ride home and then just burst into tears. Because she was like, I can't change my hair though. Like, it makes me emotional. It's like, she's like, I can't change my hair. And like, having to sit with that in my house, it just feels like being attacked and then you don't get the chance to fight back. And so now, like, that she ensures there's no gaps between wash days, which is really annoying because it doesn't give me a break or her hairstylist a break.
But also she's having to think about something she shouldn't really be having to think about.
Do you know what? I'm just like...
I wonder what... I mean, this is so interesting. I wonder to what degree all of this from your own past has played into your choice to work in a field that is about appearances.
Jesus.
So, I mean... That's quite an interesting little psychological quirk, isn't it? So you grew up with this constant drip of people noticing aloud how you look, for better or worse, but just describing how you look at you all the time. And now you work in a field that is all about our appearances.
Yeah.
So tell me what drew you to that and... if there are any conflicts day to day in how you move around the world doing your job.
Oh, do you know what? And I try to say this as often as possible. It really just comes down to following the zing, following my destiny. Because the reality is, if I could do another job and be satisfied just based on being picked apart, I would. And I say that with, if I could become a doctor and that give me the same... woo, you know, that same thrill or that same acknowledgement of feeling like I'm keyed into what I'm supposed to do here, I would do it in a heartbeat. To the point that one of my biggest goals is to do work that offers me that zing, but no one knowing my face. I always say to my friends, the day you search me on social media and you can't find me, have some champagne because I've really fucking made it. The day I get to erase all that shit, oh my God, and still live the same standard of living, I'd love that. And so I don't even look at it like, you know, I made a choice. It's like this gig chose me. I've tried various other things and they just don't satisfy me in this way. And I don't know where the tipping point happened. So I shaved my head at 17. That's a really, looking back, that's a cumbersome age to make such a bold choice.
I mean, it really, really is. It's the time in your life, in one's life, where you will probably feel less confident about standing out than at any other time in your life. You just want to assimilate whoever you are. You want to be one of the gang. You want to be like everyone else.
Yeah. But do you know what I thought, especially like literally when I had to go to 5 barbershops in Brixton that day because the first 4 refused to shave my
head. I can imagine.
They were like, you're having a moment, your mum's gonna kill us.
You're doing a Britney.
Yeah, they were like, we don't want that on us. And I think by that point I got so pissed off with being picked apart just existing. I was like, I really want this haircut and I want it enough to be like, fuck it, you guys have picked me apart my whole life trying to assimilate anyway, I'm going all in on me and how I want to look and appear and feel and show up in the world. And I remember I was working at my dad was a solicitor. I was temping as a receptionist at his law firm at the time. And I walk in and he's like, fucking hell, have you lost your mind? Everyone's going to think you're a leser. It's like, thanks, Dad. A couple of years later, I remember walking with him down that same road and he puts his arm around me and he's like, you shaving your head was the best thing you've ever done. He was like, it made me even grapple with what I think about a black woman and her beauty and what hair means. And he was like, as long as you want it, he was like, please never, never change. He was like, it's just you. He's like, I'm struggling to explain what I mean, but that lack of hair showed me you.
Why did you do it? Do you know why you did it?
Yeah, I was in Queens in New York and I saw a woman crossing the road coming towards me and it just felt like time stopped. It felt like the lights went red because she was crossing the road. There was so much power coming out of her. I was gobsmacked. I was like, I want that. And I think it's the hair. Like, she's not hiding. It must be that. In my mind, I was like, it's the hair. It's the lack of hair. And I'd got to the point where I'd fried, dyed, laid to the side, braids, wigs, weave. My scalp was tired. I was like, she looks free. She looks so free. What does that feel like? And the second they took my hair off in that barbershop, I was like, oh, Candice, it's nice to meet you.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, oh, babe. And what, it's been 18 years now. And I've never even thought about growing
it out. So you've had a crop for 18 years.
18 years.
And so it must be so inextricably linked with your identity now, right? I mean, you say you recognised yourself suddenly.
Yeah.
And has that remained?
Oh, when I get a fresh trim, no one can talk to me. It's like, I'm also married to a man who had a receding hairline since he was 15. And so, like, I rule the roost of the good haircut. It's just like, it also, in a world that's constantly telling black women specifically that they're not feminine enough.
Right.
It just feels like a consistent board that says, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You know? Especially because out of all my friends, I am the most quote-unquote feminine. Love a good nail, love a red lipstick, always in the perfumes, always taking a 5-hour. I'm doing all the things they say, but the hair, it's not going to fly. I don't have the time. I don't have the interest. I'm even like meditating on Esme just waking up one day and being like, I want rid of this. Because even sitting through her shit, I'm like, darling, this is, you know, we've been here 14 hours. It's exhausting. It felt exhausting. And now it's just, like you said, it's such a part of who I am. People don't even reference it anymore. It's just like, yeah, that's just, it's as if I was born this way. They're like, yeah, that's just Candice.
I have to say, even in preparation to this conversation, I didn't really think about your hair.
Exactly!
It hadn't really occurred to me how kind of subversive and distinctive it is.
Yeah.
I had forgotten that you've got a cropped haircut.
It's just not like, I think if people saw me in a wig, everyone would be like, she's having a bit of a mental health crisis. Like, what's going on?
She needs an intervention.
Yeah.
No, it's true. It's kind of your beauty trademark, but it's such a trademark that I've forgotten
it. People don't think about it. And I don't think about it until a black woman messages me and goes, I've just shaved my hair.
Has that happened to you? It must have happened to you a number of times.
A lot. It happened just last week. And I'm always there backing them up being like, babes, and if you hate it, hair grows. Please don't forget that. Hair grows quite quickly. You don't have to commit to it. But if you've got that zing, you must try. If you've woken up and you're like, I'm tired and that looks freeing, you must try it. you must, because I think it's allowed me to play with other elements of my beauty or my style that hair would have preoccupied. I am always in awe of the black women whose wigs look faultless, mm-hmm. the Beyonce level aesthetic. I'm mm-hmm. just like, Jesus, it's the money. I remember one time thinking I wanted a bit of a pixie, so we were going to make this wig. And then the woman I was talking to would be like, yeah, this bit. That... All in all, the hair alone was coming to 900 smackers. I was like, man, for a pixie, these aren't even inches. I'm not asking for bundles. This is this one. And then she said, oh, yeah. And once I install it, whatever the hell that meant, she was like, it will only last 3 days. You've got to learn to reinstall it yourself. I was like, forget it.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry for wasting your time, but I can't.
Yeah, I mean, there's an expression in beauty called black tax, in that black women have to spend so much more money than white women on all manner of things. Yeah. But that, the best part of a grand for a 3 day hair is insane. It's insane.
You know? So I look at these younger women who are now online and I'm like, how are you doing it? I do think, I wonder how they can afford it. I'm just like, that's a lot.
Tell me why clothes are so important to you.
Why are clothes so important to me? They speak for me. Again, it's very much like my grandparents. They're an armour. And I just love playing. There's something about the way I literally collect clothes that's reminiscent of me having a Barbie doll. There's a lot of play. There's a lot of, oh, I can, this is interchangeable. I can, you know, this is very fun for me. Even my fashion choices, they're not serious. And by serious, I mean, I'm more of a JW Anderson girl mm-hmm. than a Celine girl.
Sure.
I've got a pigeon clutch, for God's sake. This is always going to be extreme fun. It's not to appear as though I belong to this club. It's just fun. And so for me, clothes are just another way to send a message before I even speak. And also, just again, push the needle even further almost on being set apart. I'm only anti-Birkin because they're just everywhere. The Kellys are quite cute, but I'm just like, I'm never going to buy that, because I then think I just fall into this place where I've got another one of the bags that It Girls have. And I'm now purposefully trying to be outside. I do it with purpose. I'm like, I don't want that because everyone's got it. I love pieces where people go, only Candice could do that. And we know that's a lie. It's just that we are so used to following. And especially on social media, we see our favourite influencers all wear the same thing. And so we build up this fake desire. I am very happy being a fashion pariah. And all the girlies going, no, only Candice can do that. That just gives me so much. It's a kick. It's an addiction.
It's interesting because that makes me think about lots of women. I mean, I'm a lot older than you, but lots of women, when they get past the age of sort of 35, lots of women who have been othered in some way for whatever reason. We've been othered because we were the weird girl, or we were the quiet girl, or we were the big girl, the skinny girl, the black girl, whatever it is, that you get to a certain age and lots of women almost steer into the skid of being other.
Yeah.
From everybody else. Yeah. And do you know what? That's fine for me. I don't want to be the same. Yeah. I don't want to be like everybody else.
Yeah. It's just shaped who I am. And I think not being like everyone else, as hard as it's been for 3 decades, is going to be the thing that changes my entire life. I'm always so intrigued, or like a bit like, when people are like, oh, you know, your life has just exploded, or I'm like, you've seen nothing yet.
Yeah, of course.
This bud is just coming through the soil. And it's like, I'm finally myself, especially on social media. I think I spent the first 5 years truly believing I had to be like every other woman in order to succeed. You can pretend and you can lose your entire destiny in pretense, or you're going to march forward in truth of who you are. And I said it recently on a live. I was like, imagine God, the universe, not being able to give you what you're owed because it can't recognize you, because you're down here cosplaying as someone else for a variety of reasons that usually have nothing to do with us. But you understand you're faking it and you've missed out on all the things, all the life experiences, the job, the connection with people, because you're fake. I'm just at a point in my life where I don't have the time. I'm very conscious of time. I'm too conscious, my therapist tells me. But my dad died when I was 20, so that made me very aware of time. I'm like, I don't have time for that. This could be over any minute. And I don't want you burying this gal thinking, that's not even who I am. And so now I am so me within the first 10 seconds of meeting me that if you say I don't like candies, you're right. You're right. Because I showed you who I am. So there's no confusion. If you don't like me, I've done all right with people not liking me.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot to unpack there because, okay, so what you do and what I do, let's face it, what we all do is we are front facing on a digital platform.
Yeah.
Now, that is a life of people constantly criticizing you, criticizing how you look, criticizing how you raise your children or how they imagine you raise your children, criticizing the imagined relationship you have with your spouse, the imagined friendships you have, criticizing. Lots of people are incredibly lovely and supportive and gorgeous, and they are the majority.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the people you remember are this handful of kind of toxic, awful people. But nonetheless, they are there and they are constant. So as somebody who had been sensitized to criticism and constant observations made about you throughout life pre-internet, you're now somewhere where it is inescapable.
Yeah.
So tell me how you navigate that.
I think I navigate it, number one, and it's not that it should be this way, but you can't match African aunties telling you you're getting fat. Like, you know when you've just been through it? Just like, John 5678 with no picture. It's just not hitting because auntie told me already. This is not new info. Please.
You wish you had an impact like she does.
You wish. So I've literally come in having all those battle scars. We shouldn't want them, but they were there. And also like already being black and already being mid-sized and already being all these things. I was just like, God, this is really played out. But then I just learned the art of creating an echo chamber. And now I don't care what anyone says. I want this for all women, especially black women working online. You must work in spaces where everyone's telling you you're wonderful and you're gorgeous and you've got this. You must. I don't give a fuck about their reality about me being ugly or a terrible parent. Shut up. In this space, you are deserving of all that gassing up, all that hot air. Of course, manage your ego. But I don't like it, especially it's usually men or it's especially extremely privileged white women who are like, oh, no, you know, you can't have... We must. Why? Because the minute you put your phone down and you go out into the world is always going to tell you you're shit, you're worthless, your body's not great... A million different ways. So why do I want that in my digital atmosphere? This is the place I play pretend. And if you curate it well enough, you then get this confidence that you take into the real world where sometimes I'm just walking, even walking into this building, I feel like I glide. I'm on a cloud and I can appreciate the 15 people I've passed are probably like, ooh, or, you know, she's definitely not the beauty standard. It just doesn't penetrate because I've spent so much time building a space where every morning people are very willing to go, you've got this, you look great, you represent us, you're doing well, you need that. And so I am keyworded up to the hilt. There ain't a slur you could throw at me that's not on my keyword blocker. I don't even play the game. Now, the following's a lot bigger, but if I get a whiff of someone following me and I just don't like their profile, I used to wait for them to insult me. Now it's just on a look. I'm like, this profile, I don't like you. Get out. It's my home. It's my space. And it's the space that I get to cultivate the energy that then makes the legacy work. I can't show up to my computer to write these books that I think are going to change my daughter's life filled with dread or filled with, oh, this guy said I was ugly today. No.
I love you for that kind of zero tolerance policy, because I used to do that. I used to think, I know that you're a wrong'un. I know why you're following me.
Yeah.
But you haven't insulted me recently.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there and for ages, there were loads of people I allowed to stay there because I could work out who other people were by their presence, things like that. But it gets to a point where I just go, no, actually, I can just block you. And it's not aggressive. It's just I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And people say, well, I have a right. I have the freedom to say what I want. It's like, yes, you do have the freedom to say what you want, but you're not entitled to be published by me.
Yeah. And guess what? You don't have a right to say whatever you want to me.
Right.
If you want to have a good old gossip right. with your girls in the WhatsApp chat, go for it. I love a bit of a kiki myself, but I don't have to be here to hear that. And also because of the many intersections of my appearance, I am very, very aware of how even if I can take something, there's a woman in my community who is going to read that comment who looks like me and it decimates her.
Exactly. And so are you a compliment giver?
Oh, my gosh. A couple of days ago, I was in a car, rolled down, shouted at these girls how wicked they looked. And they just look so... Brits just aren't used to that. I'm very New York and Larry in that way.
You?
They were like, really? It's like, you look great.
It's just from Primark.
Yeah, you look great. Like, I love to give compliments. You just watch someone just... everything just relaxes. And because we're all like in our little worlds, like in our little ways, we have the things we're insecure about, or is this outfit? I love to give compliments. I'm very big on the manifestation and the positive self-talk and the way I speak to my kids. Even the way I'm trying really hard with gentle parenting. How you are spoken to makes such a difference. And I think it was the communication definitely from my grandfather and my dad that allowed me to become who I am despite all the mess the world. They constantly were like, you've got this. My granddad is so dyslexic, I have to like read his bills to him. He can't read. But every Friday he'd stop at a bookshop in Kennington and get me a new book. He brought home like War and Peace when I was 8. I was like, okay, this is a bit heavy. But he was very like, communication is going to make such a difference for you. I need you to do well. You are well. You are the greatest. Like, you can't like buy that. It's just been my biggest life's blessing to be again, and I think God was purposeful with this, to be given that confidence by Black men. Because the universe was like, girl, it's gonna be rough out there. And so I need your beginnings to really pad you up. Because if you don't have this, and I've seen it happen to lots of girls who look like me I went to school with, they just get swept away. They get swept away by the first guy who says sweet nothings, and then he ruins them and their confidence forever. They don't believe in the gifts they've been given, so now they're stuck in jobs they don't love because they don't believe they're worthy of a life that makes them feel... I watched them get eaten alive, and I was like, the only reason that hasn't happened to me is because these two Black men were like, you're the greatest thing in the world.
Tell me about your skin, because you mentioned that you had severe acne. But I'm looking at your skin and the light is like bouncing off it. So the acne has gone.
Oh my God. So
tell me what you do.
I woke up at 11, horrible acne. And then I woke up at 22 and it was like, God was like, just a joke. Ha ha ha. What do I do? Before I even say what I do, Sally, I'm now of the school of thought that enough people don't talk about genetics enough.
Sure.
I could sell you shit till tomorrow, especially on my maternal side. Like I said, they just look like they've been dipped in chocolate. Faultless, they don't get breakouts. I don't know what to tell you. I do get breakouts, but I am a beauty obsessive. I have an entire section of my wardrobe space dedicated to beauty products. So now I am in my, well, I've always been, I've not fallen asleep with my makeup on since I was 22. I even remember the time. And so I'm massive, of course, on cleansing. I deeply believe, and it's a conversation I'm having with a special doctor, that I'm in a very perimenopausal phase in my life. And so my skin is changing mm-hmm. rapidly. Mm-hmm. I used to be you could fry plant in on my face, mm-hmm. the oiliest girl. I'm getting drier at certain mm-hmm. times, but my face doesn't respond to oil well. So when it comes to moisturizing, it's now like on a dry day, something rich and dewy. I've just found Tatcha. But then
beautiful brand.
Sometimes they're water cream. And then when I'm having a breakout, oil works really well for me. Like Votary, something like slathery. I have just dipped a toe into actives. I'm a big fan of Skin and Me. I'm also a huge fan of Dr. Dennis Gross, the pill pads.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Oh my God.
One of my all-time favorite products. So would you do the peel pads and then your daily doser at night?
No. Those two must never meet. My skin has made that clear.
So you need to bookend.
Yeah, right. Or I need, you know, I'm an alternate day kind of babe.
Okay.
And I just listen to my skin, because the other day I used a peel pad and I was like, oh, that tingled a little too much. So we're just not going
to
do that for the next couple of days.
Yeah,
we're just
going to
moisturize, you know? And so I'm just there. Huge. I hate to say it because the prices, especially in this cost of living crisis, make me want to shit a cow. But Barbara Sturm, I'm just like,
it's a lot of coin.
Lady, bring it down a notch. Like, give me a discount code, something. It's just too much. But her darker skin tones serum, it's a cult classic for me. And sometimes I strong arm Bodé's credit card and it just falls into the basket. But so that's me. Like I said, I'm obsessed and I'm not married to just like one brand. If you come into my bathroom or my
100%.
Wardrobe, yeah, I'm like, I'm mixing it all up and yeah, I'm down to play, but I am a beauty obsessive.
I mean, you're looking good on it. You're a big one for a lipstick, right? You like colour.
Oh my God, I must have a red lip.
How does bold colour on your face make you feel?
Oh, alive. I tried really hard to be one of these neutral lip girlies for maybe 3 weeks. And everyone around me just kept asking if something was wrong. Not even in like a jokey way.
Yeah.
They were just like, or Bodé will just tip his head to the side and be like, is your period coming? He's like, I know in the early days of dating, you'd always have a darker lip closer to your period. I was like, no, I'm trying to be one of those got it all together girls. He was just like, don't do that. A bit like the haircut, the red lip is...
it's just who you are.
Who I am. And again, it's one of these things that black women have been told to not do.
Really?
Oh my gosh. My grandma was always like, you don't wear red lipstick. It doesn't suit us.
Really?
You stick to a dark plum. Like it was very like just the rule in my community.
Wow.
And I was just like, guys, I really like this red lip. And I found a way to make it work. So I outline my lips in a very deep plum. And then I go in with a really punchy red. And it's just my thing. And again, so many black women send me images via DM of them trying red lipstick for them.
Yeah, I get lots of women try red lips because of me, and it's one of my favourite things
in the
world.
Oh my gosh, because I know who that makes me become.
Right, and people say, I can't wear red, I don't think it suits me. And I'm like, but it doesn't suit anybody, and that's why it suits everybody.
Exactly.
It's no one's natural lip colour, and it's the one makeup item that is not for anyone else. But you, it's annoying for everyone else. It gets on their clothes. It gets on their lips. You know, it's purely for you.
Yes.
It's a selfish makeup item, which is what I love so much about red lipstick.
I've gone to like work things where I've packed in a haste and I forgot. I'm out on the town. I'm like, I must find a replacement now, today.
Because you can go anywhere with a red lip.
Like, I'm like, I must have, the outfit might be lacking. I must have the red lip. To the point that I wore fake lashes for 10 years and I only gave them up.
Extensions or strip?
Strip that I put on every day. I could do it on the train, in the bath, got so good at it. And I got a really gruesome eye infection in New York, February 2023.
Not blepharitis.
It was just,
it's the worst.
Weeping,
it's
seeping.
The worst.
And I just came home and I said, okay, I'm done with lashes. And that, I'm not going to lie, that took a really long time to get used to because I was used to the lipstick and the lash. And so now playing with mascara is new and finding a mascara brand that I really like. But also now that I don't wear the lashes, I was like, oh, and now you've bought back some time again. You know, even though it was such a part of you, I was like, you don't actually need it. The red lip does it all. And so...
it does a lot of heavy lifting,
like,
a red lip.
I'm very... whenever a brand are like, oh, we're going to hire a makeup artist, I'm like, don't bother. Please, not for my case, because I won't use them. I show up to every shoot ready
done.
To go. I'm like, I like a slightly matte face with just a glowy sheen and a red lip and we're good to go. And a lot of makeup artists always want to do their thing. And I'm like, no.
Do you enjoy that moment, those moments you spend doing your makeup?
Love. Love.
Just you and you.
Me and me. Especially now I have the privilege of having a dressing room where I close that door and light a candle. And it's just me in the mirror. It feels so exotic. It feels so almost unfair, or another ha-ha moment to the world, because I was told I wasn't worthy of a space like this. You don't get to have that time to yourself. Too much of a privilege for a Black woman to have such a space that's all for her. You cannot have that. And it's right at the top of the house. When the doors close, no one comes in. It's so dreamy having... takes me about 25 minutes tops to just put my makeup on. I love it.
So, Candice Brathwaite, when you're in your amazing womb-like room, just with you and you in the mirror, do you like what you see now?
Love. I'm borderline obsessed. Not gonna lie. So, and I won't lie. So
this is my favourite answer to that question ever. I'm borderline obsessed. Look.
Still having some, and will continue to have, not even issues, but just questions around my body, because I'm a mum of two. And so I'm constantly toying with a little tummy tuck. It's like a big conversation amongst my friends. I'm like, am I going to have this thing? Am I not? And I always go back to no, because I know five women who have had tummy tucks and they've all suffered horrendously. So I'm like, the data is really not for me right now. So there's always that. There's always, how would I feel if I woke up and I could just look down and see my vag? That's not happened since I was like 10. There's always been a mound to get over. What would a six pack feel like? I don't know. But I'm like, is it worth the healing and the risks of surgery? For me, not quite yet. So there's still that. But once those Spanx are on and the face is on and the perfume sprayed, I'm like, no, girl, you're great. You're great, you're great. And also, let's not deny so much of the ills we feel about ourselves are because we're online all the time being shown versions of people that aren't even themselves. And that's why in my OOTDs now, I always start in my undies. And I get so many comments from women who are like, you've just got your stretch marks out. I'm like, yeah, it's like being at a beach. There's going to be variety. But we don't see that. Our algorithm just shows us fake tummy, BBLs. Like, we just see something that isn't even attainable. So if I can be that little, oh my God, who's this real person that stumbled onto this feed? It feels so good. It's like the outsider just having a little play. I'm like, this is what my version of motherhood looks like. And it's okay to look like this. More to the point, it's okay to not hide it and it's okay to enjoy it. Because I also think there's a conversation of, well, you know, oh yeah, you don't have to cover up as much, but no brand or business is really going all in and saying, no, you can enjoy looking that way.
Yes, it doesn't have to be body neutrality.
Yeah,
you can actually be delight in it.
Delight. And I've learned to curate a feed that has women of various body types delighting in their bodies, which has just been a revelation for me.
You've been a revelation. You're one of my favourite guests ever. I love you even more in real life. Candice Brathwaite, thank you so much. And thank you all for listening. If you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, please leave your ratings and your reviews. And in the meantime, I will see you with another guest in the next show. Bye-bye. Insanity Group.